This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Ride, where the Bills have just wrapped up moments ago their first organized team activity of 2019. They've got 10 of these sessions over the next 3 weeks that lead them right into the mandatory minicamp in mid-June. The Bills are getting on the field for 7-on-7 work, 9-on-7 run game work, and 11-on-11 teamwork. No contact, no live contact, no real pads. But it's the closest thing to football they've had around here since last December. Buffalo, one of 16 NFL teams that opened their OTAs today, and 12 more teams will begin tomorrow. Organized team activity, the start of phase three of offseason workouts. Colts have signed quarterback Chan Kelly, the Western New York native, the nephew of Hall of Famer Jim Kelly. Chan Kelly was a tryout player during the Colts' rookie minicamp a week or so ago. Now he is back with Indy as the fourth quarterback on the roster. Released by the Denver Broncos the day after he was arrested for criminal trespassing back in October. He entered a couple's home in October. Kelly, seventh-round pick of the Broncos in 2017, pled guilty to misdemeanor second-degree criminal trespassing a couple of months ago. Eagles defensive end Chris Long, the reigning Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year, calling it a career after 11 seasons in the NFL, made the announcement Saturday night on social media, sharing a photo of a red cup in his hand and the mountains in the distance, saying he has had enough. The Walter Payton Man of the Year, Chris Long, we'll talk about him in a moment. Hockey news today. The Boston Bruins captain Zdeno Chara skated yesterday but did not participate in practice as the Bruins await an opponent for the Stanley Cup Finals. The Bruins defeated the Carolina Hurricanes to complete their sweep without Zdeno Chara. They advanced to the finals, which will not start until a week from today. They'll get either the San Jose Sharks or the St. Louis Blues. Tonight in the NBA, Game 4 of the Western Conference Finals, Golden State and Portland tip off at 9 o'clock tonight. Warriors lead that series 3-0. And the sports books favor Brooks Koepka to become the second golfer to win 3 straight U.S. Opens. Yesterday, he finished off his PGA Championship at Bethpage Black, his third title in the last 5 major tournaments. That's the update from One Bills Drive. Brooks Koepka, 5 majors. He's won 3 of them, the last 5 majors. He's the man. He's the real deal.
It's interesting when you hear him talk, and I guess this is like a great golfers are like this. Not all of them were, but this guy is like so flatline.
Yeah.
Which is what you got to be in a golf course, right?
How old is he?
Old, right? He's not old. He's in late 20s, yeah. Right? Or early 30s at least.
I'm going to look that up.
So, you know, when you start out, me, particularly when I started out playing, I was a club thrower and a ground slammer.
I heard that story from Frank Reich.
So, but I think the way you got to be in that game is just like play like you don't care, right? And Koepka, I mean, you can. It's hard to say whether he's 8 under or 8 over. You can't tell.
Yeah.
And well, I think that's the way you got to be.
You told me you didn't watch any of the PGA. I watched maybe an hour yesterday. And in that hour, I watched Koepka kind of fall apart.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
His lead shrank. And I thought, this is going to get away from him. It did not. I didn't watch to the end. But it did not get away from him, which is testimony to exactly what you just said, right? He's got composure.
Yeah, he's just never too up, never too down, unfortunately, unlike when Tiger Woods was at the top or even Jack Nicklaus was at the top, he's just not that interesting. You know, he does his interviews like that too. He's not. He looks. I don't know. He's just not the guy I put invite to the post tournament party, right? You know, except for the fact that he won, right?
He might have a few more,
right?
I showed it to you this morning and our producer, Jay Harris, the video that I actually came out around noon yesterday.
You're unbelievable.
I thought it was amazing. Brooks Koepka, hottest golfer on the planet right now, has a very attractive young girlfriend. What was her name? I forget her name. Jen something. And so they're walking out, and if you're watching on MSG, you see she wants a kiss before he goes out for his final round.
And he... He cold shoulders her.
And then she is mad.
Oh, she's hot. You can tell. She doesn't, you know.
They're on TV, national TV, by the way. This is on CBS before the opening of the PGA Championship. You just can't help but think. Can we get one more look at that?
That tickled Murph to no end.
Because I just thought about the rest of the day. Brooks Koepka wins the PGA Championship, but he spends the rest of the day probably deep into last night. What? Apologizing?
I've been there.
Amazing video.
You're going someplace. He's in the final round of the PGA. And he's trying to get through there, and she reaches out to him once, and somebody comes up and fist bumps, and so he gets distracted, and he turns back to her, and she's going to come back in, just give him a peck. You know how it is. Just give him a peck on the cheek. Good luck. She starts to reach up to do it, and he's like somewhere else, right? He's like, yeah, yeah. And she just turns away. And she was not happy.
I wonder if she probably thought about leaving. I'm out of here.
Oh, my gosh. I felt bad for him. I felt bad for her, too. But you're laughing at it because you're – it's amazing what
you will never forget the 2019 PGA Championship.
Yeah, for that.
And it has nothing to do with the golf.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
That's not true. That's not true.
All right. Hey, we got a good Twitter poll going on here today. We need some calls on it. Love to talk with you. 803-0550, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. It's a good Twitter poll because I said it is. Darn it. Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott walk out to watch OTAs today. Where do their eyes go first? What do you think? Do they go to their second-year franchise quarterback candidate, Josh Allen? Do they watch him first? Most of you think their eyes go there first, at least those responding on Twitter. 51% say they look at Josh Allen. 34% say they look at their offensive line with so many new faces. Steve and I agreed that's where we would look because just to see who's lining up where. 14% say they look at their first-round pick, Ed Oliver, who presents a lot of interesting possibilities for that group. 1% have somebody else in mind. What do you think? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550.
We've been busy. We've got like 3 pages of tweets that people have been sending in trying to get on. And we'll start with one from Jack. Josh Allen, 100%. They'll want to see how his off-season work has helped him and if, at first glance, he looks as if he's grown as a QB. Second, if I were them, I'd start figuring out the O-line battles and who looks like the first five here in the spring. But it's the quarterback first. That's from Jack. From Peter, he says it all starts on the O-line. Find the five best sooner than later. Get them on the same page immediately. Josh's success depends on it. And that's probably pretty true, too, because that's one of the big things that we thought all last year was what they got to get better guys around, and the offensive line didn't play well. And it wasn't that Josh was running for his life. It was that even the running game wasn't working, right?
Yeah.
They couldn't move the guys out in front. They didn't have any running game to speak of, and there's a ton of people that are paying the price for that. LeSean McCoy all of a sudden went from being a pretty good back, all of a sudden, he's washed up now, he can't play. Well, he didn't have anywhere to run last year. That's a tough way to make a living when you're a back that's elusive and there's no place to elude. You have no room. So I think LeSean McCoy is looking coming back with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. He'll want to play better. But that offensive line last year in the run and the pass was substandard, and if they don't fix that, it doesn't matter how big a step Josh wants to take forward this year.
More from the tweet sheet when we ask you if you're Bean and McDermott, who do you watch most during OTAs? Bernie says, absolutely Josh Allen, but my eyes would first look at the offensive line, seeing who works best together. If it doesn't get right starting now, it doesn't matter if Josh Allen can't stand upright and have a clean pocket. He's right. And from Let's Go Bills, this tweet, my eyes are on Josh. Last year he came to OTAs as third-string quarterback, just off rookie minicamp. Does he show command of the offense? Does he show he knows the playbook? How do his new guys respond to him? This is what I want to see. Yeah. That's a lot to ask in this round of practices, that's all. I think you're not wrong. I just think command of the offense when it's, you're running scripted plays against a defense that knows and seen these plays before.
That's also scripted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I do know this, and we said it a lot, having him – coming back, everything's intact from last year to this year, moving forward. It just gives you the idea that it's going to start there and go from there. Sam Darnold's going to – he's back to square one in this offense. New coaches, new everything for Sam Darnold. Josh Rosen moving from Arizona over to Miami now. He's got everything brand new and different. He's going to – it's going to take him a while to get acclimated. Baker Mayfield, the head coach has changed. His offense is the same, but now his offensive coordinator, the guy that was in the room with him. Remember, Freddie Kitchens started last year as the quarterback coach behind Todd Haley.
That's right, yeah.
And then halfway through it, all those guys got whacked. And now Freddie Kitchens is the offensive coordinator. Hey, that's awesome. Now he's the head coach. How big of evolution is that over the course of, you know, four or 5 months? And now they've got to come back. He's got to run training camp. He's got to run the schedule. He's got to run, you know, all of the training schedule. Everything goes through Freddie Kitchens, and it's up to him. So how much is that going to take away from his relationship with Baker Mayfield? All of this stuff, when you look around and you put it how and reflect it back onto Josh Allen, how that's going to be, none of that is on the table for him. Same offensive coordinator, same backup quarterback, new quarterback coach, no question about it. It's the same offense. He's got new and better guys around him to play with. But he's the one now, for the first time last year, and the tweet just said it, he was the third string quarterback. Now he's the number one guy. It's his offense with his words, his vocabulary that he's familiar with. He's the guy teaching it to these young guys. Yeah. He's the guy that's correcting Cole Beasley and John Bryant, say, hey, I want you to do this and this on this. When I say this, here's what it means. That's the difference, and Josh Allen, I think, gets to do that where some of the other guys that were drafted with him don't.
Here's a couple of other responses on Twitter on the tweet sheet. Where do Bean and McDermott's eyes go first at the OTA today? Josh responds, I voted other. While I'm happy with the offseason additions, I think wide receiver is probably the most questionable group. Given teams are likely to cut or trade some wideouts, we need to really evaluate the talent to see if we need to make any more additions. Well, the one thing this leadership group has demonstrated over a couple of years is that they are not afraid to make changes. Wide receiver, yes, they've done that a lot in the first couple of years they've been on the job here.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And we'll see about that. That's interesting. Let's take a phone call on this topic. Bean and McDermott, what were they paying attention to at today's first OTAs? Where do you think their eyes went first? We'll go to the phones and go to Jim in Amherst, New York. Hello, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
I feel that the coaches would come out and look at the quarterback status to see how he's improved on the offseason. In general, it's a team sport. You all play together. And I think after they observe the quarterback after a few reps, they look at the whole team in general to see where their strengths and where their needs are. Overcome what they did this year in free agency and the draft.
So you think they're looking at quarterbacks to see if they have needs at quarterback? Is that what you're saying, Jim? Did I misunderstand that?
No. The needs are in the whole team itself.
Okay.
Out on the team, I think when the coaches come out, they look at the quarterback and see how he's improved on the off season.
Gotcha.
And then as the whole team itself, they look at the whole team practice and see where their needs are and what their strengths are to see what they picked up this year that could void that fill.
Gotcha.
Jim, yeah, you're right. But that's right 365 days a year. They're always looking to see what they need. And it's on film. The question really is, if you're going to go out to practice today, I think you're saying you're going to go wide over and stand by the quarterback drills. And I get that. That's fine. But the simple fact of the matter is all Brandon Bean does is evaluate the guys that he's got on this team and evaluate everybody else around the league and all the players available and try and get the best ones. Certainly it has to do with need, but that's what they've been doing since he was hired. So, that's no different today than it was yesterday.
And I guess the premise of this question, Jim, thanks for participating, is that they'll watch today's practice, they'll watch tomorrow's too. They will watch it live with their own eyes today and then go back and watch the video probably as we speak right now. And our question is kind of geared towards what is the first thing they went out there and looked at? And everybody out there has a different thing, right? Everybody right. on the practice field observing today might have a different place that they go first. Let's go to Paul in Hamburg on the line with us. Paul, go ahead. Welcome to the show. You're on the air.
What is the first thing?
Paul, you got to turn down that radio and talk to us directly, please.
Different thing, right? Everybody on the practice field observing today.
Paul or not. Okay. Let's go to Brian in North Tonawanda. Hello, Brian.
Hi. I just wanted to talk about the running back situation. I don't think you guys have spoke about that at all.
No, okay. We haven't. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say about Shady's deal, and he's in his final year of his contract, and we have about four or five other running backs. Do you think that we're going to keep Shady for the whole year?
Yeah, I do.
Here's the thing, Paul. Go ahead.
I don't know about the whole year. If they get to trade deadline and things are happening and things are going maybe not what they expected, that's another story. But I think he's on the 53. I really do. And the reason I think that is because Bean and McDermott have said that over and over and over again.
And the money they're making, everybody says, hey, LeSean McCoy's making all this. The money they're making is irrelevant. They got all kinds of cap space. They don't have to worry about him. If they want the guy, if they like the guy, he's here. They've worked very hard over the last two seasons to get their financial house in order. If a guy's on this roster, he fits on this roster with his salary and everything. They're not going to cut a guy because he's making too much. They got to this point exactly for that reason, so they don't have to make financial decisions about players. Even if the guy's only slightly better, they can still keep him. Even if LeSean McCoy's reps get cut and he's only carrying the ball 10 times this year rather than 20 times or 15 times, whatever, and you pick the numbers you want. If he's carrying the ball significantly less, they don't have to make financial adjustments. They don't have to adjust their roster because of finances. That's what they've been working on for 2 years, and they finally got in order. So don't worry about what LeSean McCoy is making. That's all irrelevant now. The money is in order. Certainly some guys will live up to their contract. Some guys will not. It doesn't matter. They just want the best players they can get, no matter what they're making, because their financial house is in order, and they've been working hard on that for 2 years. So don't think a guy like LeSean McCoy is going to get cut because he's making too money. That's not the way the atmosphere is. You only do that when you're making silly decisions other places, and they haven't been doing that.
Steve, you know what I think, and I've been thinking of this. Look, they've made big changes offensive line, right? Six or seven new faces. And, yeah, a lot of that is about Josh. You got to get Josh protection, get this offense going. Some of that, I believe, some of the changes up front have to do with LeSean McCoy, too. They've got a real asset, a potential Pro Football Hall of Famer in the backfield whose production dropped off dramatically last year, mostly because, I believe, because of the work going on up in front of him. Some of those offensive line signings they made, I think, are done with LeSean McCoy in mind, too. It's not just all about Josh with the changes on the O-line. Am I right? Wrong?
Yeah, I agree. Not only did the changes up front have to do with LeSean McCoy, the type of guy they drafted in the draft has to do with LeSean McCoy. Devin Singletary is a little LeSean McCoy. His style is that like LeSean. He's a scat back, running back, tight, good in tight spaces, like we've all seen LeSean McCoy. And the Bills, remember when we talked to the Bills about how they evaluated Devin Singletary when they scouted him, could you catch as well as LeSean McCoy? And they're very satisfied that he's going to be able to do whatever they need him to do in the passing game. So not only is LeSean McCoy a beneficiary or purported beneficiary of all the things they've done at the offensive line and wide receiver, his style of play also kind of influenced the guy they wanted in the draft because he's the same type of back.
Let me say this, too, and ask this, I guess, more accurately, Steve. If you're a Bills fan and you either advocate trading away LeSean McCoy, which is fine, or you anticipate they will trade away LeSean McCoy, either you want to see it happen or you think it might happen, either way, what do you think they get in return? A fourth rounder, maybe? I mean, is that really worth saying goodbye to a potentially productive member of your offense? You think they get more than a fourth rounder for LeSean McCoy at this point? I don't see that.
No, not with, he's just got 1 year this season.
Yeah,
it's this season. That's it. I mean, that's all he's sitting there with. So I think what most teams will do is watch what the Bills do with him. The Bills make the first move. You're either going to sign him or extend him. You're going to hand him the ball a lot. You're not going to use him very much. You're going to decide that he's not good enough anymore. Whatever the decision you can make regarding LeSean McCoy, if you're the Buffalo Bills, every other team in the league is sitting there watching and saying, okay, what are you going to do? And then we're going to do something else. You know, either we're going to take him, we're going to take a shot at him, we're going to sign him, we're going to see what we can get him for, we're going to see what we can trade for him, we're going to see, you know, if we can get him cheaper. All of that stuff is on the table. But the ball is in the court of the Buffalo Bills. They're going to decide what happens. LeSean's going to show up and play.
Yeah. Here's a call from Paul in Hamburg. Go ahead, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
You bet.
I think the battle's going to be in tight end because they have a lot of people in position at tight end battling for that position, and they want to see who's going to prove themselves. Another question would be a good Twitter poll I was going to ask you guys about, how would you feel about a Hall of Fame for fans? The players vote for what fans should be in the hall, their own Hall of Fame team.
You know, there is the 12th man up on the Bills wall. Is that what you're talking about? The Bills Wall of Fame?
No, I'm just saying for at Canton they have
National. Oh, I got you. Yeah, hey,
they have each team vote for a person they want to put in their own Hall of Fame and have the players give them a jacket and you know, make a nice thing out of it for people.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I think it. Listen, there are some people who, I mean, it would be hard to draw up some criteria for what it would take. And you're right. And it's interesting. You say the players would vote on it. That's interesting too. I don't know who would nominate them. Plus, I don't know how you draw the line between this guy and that guy. It's an interesting concept. I don't have a problem with it necessarily, because there are certainly fans out there that are different than everybody else. So giving them a place of their own to be recognized, I don't have a problem with it. I see it. I don't know that Canton is the place for it, but certainly you could put it anywhere you wanted to and start having a banquet. And people would show up.
All right, I'll go.
You know? Yeah, exactly, right?
Let's have a party.
Yeah, so there you go. We'll see. But I don't have a problem with that. It's an interesting idea.
Thanks, Paul. And I think that's it for this segment. We're going to take a break. We're coming back with more. You okay with that?
I guess. We got true and false. And what
true and false coming up. We still got to talk about the owners' meetings that are going on. There will start on tomorrow night, Wednesday.
Too much
down
stuff
in Key Biscayne.
Going on.
A lot going on today. We'll talk about that when we come back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. On Buffalo Bills Radio. Got a half hour left in the show, a half hour to respond to our Twitter poll. An amazing Twitter question today. Where do Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott's eyes, where did they go first at today's organized team activity? Look, they're looking at video. They've got nine more of these sessions than the mandatory minicamp in mid-June. But today, first day with, not real pads, but at least uniforms and helmets. And 7-on-7, 9-on-7, 11-on-11 work. What do they look at first? What do you think? Give us a call. The phones have been dead today. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550.
Unfortunately dead when we picked up on a couple of people, too.
Oh. See, I can't say that. Steve can get away with that. I can't do that. I cannot abuse our audience like that. But Steve can. You found a good tweet.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Let me get back to it, because it was a good one by Robert Mortimer Jr.
Let me read this one from Bills Fan Extreme.
Go ahead.
Where do McDermott and Bean, what do they look at first? Bills Fan Extreme says, Josh Allen is the key to the entire season. So he gets the first look. He's young. How did he handle his first full offseason as a pro? What kind of shape is he in? How much of what he learned last year has been retained? These are the questions that could be answered early. I get it, Extreme. The only thing is, they've had him here for 5 weeks. They know what kind of shape he was in this offseason. And if there were issues with that, which I have no reason to believe there were, they probably fixed it already, right? I mean, they've been here 5 weeks, more than 5 weeks, getting in shape, voluntary off-season conditioning. So I don't know if that would be the today thing, but I get you.
And this is all along the same lines, because we're kind of headed down this topic road. Robert Mortier Jr. says, I'm waiting to hear what our new veteran wide receivers think about Josh as time goes. He's talking about John Brown and Cole Beasley. They both played with two high-profile young quarterbacks. Lamar Jackson in Baltimore for John Brown Joe Flacco as well in Baltimore, and also, of course, Dak Prescott down in Dallas for Cole Beasley. I'm sure have heard, right or wrong, the pros and cons so far of Josh, and I have a feeling they will be saying this guy can play and he throws a nice ball. It will be interesting to hear what John Brown and Cole Beasley have to say about Josh Allen, the way he plays quarterback, because they did play with Lamar Jackson last year and Dak Prescott the last few years.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yep. The media gets to talk to these players, gets to watch a little bit of OTAs tomorrow. We got to watch, right? We're going to watch. I wanted to watch today.
You got to just strut out there like you own the joint.
Again,
I'm going to watch practice.
Another example of what Steve can get away with. And
yeah. Yeah, right.
Let's go to a phone call here. Dave in Tonawanda. Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to know, everyone keeps talking about the tight ends. They're worried about it. Howard thinks they need a tight end, and everybody's, what's wrong with Kroom? I think he could be a great receiving tight end. He a little bit last year, and with Lee Smith and the high pick.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I think they got the big yeah. They should be all right for blocking tight ends. I think he's a true receiving tight end, and I think that'll help.
And I just got to say, and I mentioned this on the show a couple of weeks ago, I did a fan event with Brandon Bean. Somebody asked the question, who's been the standout so far in the offseason workouts? And boom, first name out of his mouth, Jason Kroom. That means something. Kroom, to me, that indicated that Kroom has had a good offseason. We know he was a capable receiver, working hard on his blocking last year. And as Chris Brown and I have said, and Steve as well at times, nobody works harder at being a better blocking tight end than Jason Kroom. He did it all last summer. Every time at training camp, I wanted to do a – you know how it is. You're pressed for time. Quick post-training camp practice interview. Let's get Jason Kroom. He couldn't do it because he's working with Rob Boris on blocking. I mean, he would say in every training camp practice last summer, Kroom would spend at least a half hour working on blocking technique with the tight ends coach Rob Boris. Yeah. Hard worker.
Great tight ends are, you know, we're laughing. They're like the white whale. They're like they're a unicorn. They're hard to find. You got to get a guy who is big and physical enough to play at the end of the line of scrimmage on an NFL team, right? I mean, he's got to be big and strong and athletic and he also has to have this mentality that he's going to mix it up with some of the biggest, baddest guys on the field. Those guys just don't get off the bus. You know, those guys are hard to find. Plus, then he's got to be that guy that can run down the middle and outrun a middle linebacker. He can out-jump a safety. He can do all this. So they've got to be this physical specimen that just doesn't happen very often. And then also have the grit to go down inside and block in the run game. They're hard to find, and that's why Jason Kroom, who knows, and that, it's really telling that hey, he wasn't working on pass catching, he was working on blocking, and it's always interesting to me, Murph, because you'll get guys that do this. You gotta go, wow, he's a really good pass catcher. And you see him out there, and sure enough, he's out there pass catching. He's catching balls out of the jug machine. You never see him working on the rest of it. You never see him working on his blocking. To have a guy who is a great pass catcher who goes out and works on the stuff he's not good at, that's just it sounds simple, but some guys don't think that way.
Yep.
And that's what it's all about. It's getting your weaknesses to be strengths so that your strengths can become elite. And when you can do that, you got a guy that really turns in from something that's okay into something that's pretty special.
Ed on the line from Auburn, New York. Hello, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you today?
Doing good.
Great.
Here, I'm reading and seeing that the Bills 5-11, 6-10, 7-9, 8-8 by some of the national publications or the people who like to guess on this stuff. Is the Bills, in your estimation, is the Bills' talent that far behind?
Behind who?
From
like
what
the league?
What these other people are from behind the league. They're saying 5-11, 6-10, 7-9.
Yeah. No, they're not. That what they're having. You're talking about the over under on gambling. I'm sorry. Is that what you're talking about, Ed?
Just what I'm reading about it. What on gambling on what the seasons are going
to
be.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing. It has nothing to do with the talent level. What there are some question marks about Buffalo. They got a lot of new faces. Nobody knows what those new faces are going to play like when they get in the room. And the national level, the national presence of the Buffalo Bills isn't as large as, say, it is for the Dallas Cowboys or the Giants or any of these other teams. So people don't really keep tabs on what Buffalo's doing. So nationally speaking, the guys who write those things, particularly in the gambling end of it, they write about what the public consciousness is about that team, thinking this is what people are going to think the Bills can win. Forget about what they've done on offense. Forget about the free agents they've signed. Forget about the positives you've seen in and around the building. This is about what people outside of Buffalo think about the Buffalo Bills and where they would bet, not about the actual talent on the roster.
I don't agree with that. But I would say this. I think most of the underassessment of Buffalo's talent level, which I do believe exists, occurs at the quarterback spot. I think, and I know we have a higher opinion, Steve and I, than most of what outsiders think of Josh Allen. I think most Bills fans have a higher opinion, and maybe it's, I don't think it's delusional at any rate, and I don't think it's even overinflated. I think what we saw, if you didn't watch the Bills' last half dozen games last year, you might not get Josh Allen. You might not understand the weekly progress that Bills fans, us, and even local media saw with Josh Allen. So I think that's part of the way that maybe national media, who, by the way, who the hell cares what they think, but I think that's how people get to 5 wins, 6 wins, because they didn't see Josh Allen's steady rate of progression last year, which I think makes us feel better about the Bills than many people outside of Buffalo.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time, about what we saw, and even and I say it all the time, casual fans could tell a difference in the way he played. Forget about week 10 through week 17, or whenever it was he came back from his – whatever. The last, you know, those last six or seven games that he played in, forget about those, from first week to 17th week, it was week by week. You could see week by week, game to game, things that he did differently that improved that team's chances to win. And I don't remember ever seeing a guy do that.
Get better every week?
Get better every week. Yeah. I mean, they say, yeah, he's getting better every week. And you have to take coach's word for it. Yeah, he's studying better. He's getting it more in practice. He's easier in the huddle and all that. All the things that they see on a day-to-day basis, nobody else has access to. And it's easy to, you know, you take their word for it. But forget that. We were sitting in the stands, and you could tell a difference. Yeah. That's something that you don't see.
Hey, we got to get to this, or we're going to run out of time here. I know there's a few calls. We'll see if we can get to those. NFL owners, they get together, committee meetings tomorrow night in Key Biscayne, Florida, and a full owners meeting one day only on Wednesday. Couple of rules issues on the table. We're getting our man Mike Pereira back on the show later this week to see what happens with these rules. Thursday's on the show with us, I'm told, so the meetings will be over. Two things of note in the rules changes. Number one, overtime. You know, the Chiefs had the proposal that both teams get the opportunity to possess the ball at least one time in overtime, even if the first team to possess scores a touchdown. That's what happened to the Chiefs in the playoff game against the Patriots last year. They didn't play defense. Patriots score a touchdown, game over. Chiefs never offense sees the field. So there's an overtime component here. Eliminate overtime in preseason. Everybody would vote for that. Eliminate the overtime coin toss so that the winner of the initial coin toss to begin the game may choose whether to kick or receive or which goal to defend, whatever. The overtime rule, we are told and are reading, is not going anywhere with the owners, right? At least not this year.
No.
It was tabled at the meetings a couple of months ago. The other issue, which is troublesome, I'm not going to flip out about it, but you're back to replay use for pass interference, right? Offensive, defensive, pass interference. New one-year rule in the NFL where replay challenges can be used for pass interference calls, and in the final 2 minutes of the half, the replay official can call for challenges. There's an amendment to that rule that says final 2 minutes, those are challenges too, only for pass interference calls, not for any of the replay. Which to me is a further expansion, by the way, of the replay rule that I don't like in the first place. But they're going to discuss that. It is a one-year trial run for this replay use on pass interference. Okay. I don't like it. I don't like the amendment. I don't like the rule. And I'm hoping that it gets voted down, but I have very little hope that that'll happen. Your thoughts, Steve?
I'm coming around. I'm you and
did
I
you
were
Sean on, talk about it the other day?
You and I were on diametrically opposed trajectories early in our tenure together, where I was all about special about replay and getting it right, no matter and whatever it took and do all that. I'm kind of coming back around full circle, thinking, you know, that they could get it the right way about what they can challenge, when they can challenge it. I think they should almost have less of it. You know what I mean? Just pick your spots better. I get the last 2 minutes of the game, last 2 minutes of the second half to take it off the plate of the coaches. But by the same token, you got to get it right. And if it doesn't hold the game up, if it's easy to do, you got to do it. The problem is, and technology has helped, is that it doesn't always come out that way. I don't want to go back in time, like, you know, whatever, and say, hey, you're going to have to go back and put time on the clock, and you got to do this, you got to do that. If it's simple, quick, and easy, replay it, get it done, get it right, and get back to the game. So I think if you could get it to a place where, yeah, there's less replays, but they get it right quicker.
Yeah, everyone wants to get it right. Here's the thing. The proponents of this amendment who say instead of the replay review being called by the upstairs booth, the proponents say by leaving the challenge in, the coach's flag challenge, it will make for fewer replay reviews. In other words, they think that if it's left upstairs for the upstairs official to say, let's take another look at that. Let's review this play, this pass interference play, final 2 minutes. I thought it was a great quote. Somebody quoted somebody saying that would turn into like free throws at the end of a basketball game, college basketball game.
Right.
It's close. We better do it. Oh, it's close. We better do that one too. All of a sudden, you're piled up, and the game is slowed to a crawl because they're reviewing every single potential pass interference call because it's coming from upstairs. If the coaches have skin in the game and have to use a replay challenge, potentially lose the timeout, have to still have a replay challenge in the final 2 minutes.
They should be penalized for challenging and getting it wrong.
Well, they lose the timeout, right?
That's not enough.
Okay.
Yeah, make it.
But anyway, they think that this amendment to the replay challenge will make for fewer replay reviews. I don't know. I don't care. I'll tell you what. I love Pete Carroll, Seattle Seahawks coach. He wants to return to the days before instant replay. Did you see this? Peter King, Football Morning in America. He polled 25 people asking the one thing they'd like to change about football. Pete Carroll's quote, "I'd like to get rid of or at least decrease the use of instant replay. I get all the reasons why we have replay. Technology has opened up a new world for us to get to this point." But Pete Carroll says this, "I miss the human element of trusting the officials to make the calls in the moment. And then the rest of us having to live with what they called. It was both fun and frustrating, but I really liked the game better when the officials were just as much a part of the game as the players." Pete Carroll, right? The most progressive coach maybe in the league, says, "Let's get use of instant replay." He's my new second favorite coach in the NFL. Seriously. He's right. He's right.
I get it. You know what? I don't want to be this grandpa, but it does. It's something you gotta live with it. You gotta learn to live with it.
With the bad calls.
Right. Yeah. You gotta live with
get them
mistakes.
Better. Find another way to get the officiating.
Somebody in. I've come to know over the course of my broadcasting career over the last couple of decades, and even I can't even say that over parts of my career, the officials really are a special breed of guys. It is in their innate makeup to get it right. They're trying to get it right. They're doing the right thing. They make the right calls for the right reasons most of the time. And football is no different than either. The bigger and faster and more athletic these guys are, the harder it is to do that. But they are invested in this game to get it right. They want to get it right. And every time a bad call happens, everybody accuses the guy of cheating or having money on the game or some outrageous conspiracy theory about the league wants this team to win because it's a bigger TV market and all this rubbish. It is garbage. There's nothing wrong with living with a mistake. You know? Certainly, this team goes to a playoff game and this team goes home. This team goes to the Super Bowl, this team goes home. I get all of that. But that play that happened this last year that started this whole new conversation about replay and where it should go happened once in my lifetime. Once.
Yeah.
In my 57 years, never has there been a play that bad, that egregious, at a moment that big. Never. Once. And this seems like an incredibly knee-jerk reaction by an NFL that never knee-jerk reacts. And yet here we are.
Yep.
I don't get it.
Did you say there's nothing wrong with living with a mistake? Is that your quote?
Yeah.
Would you do me a favor and tell my wife that? We're taking a break. We got more coming up. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Okay, so what did we learn today? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had a good guest today, Tyree Jackson, Bills rookie, undrafted rookie quarterback, who is here now, first day of OTAs, organized team activity. We had Tyree in here, and he talked about what he has learned in the couple of weeks since he was signed by the Buffalo Bills.
Everyone has a role, you know. Josh is obviously the starter and the franchise guy, and it's awesome. You got to learn from him, and you know, when you're out there, learn visually. You got to, you know, steal reps. That's what we always say. So when he's taking a rep, I'm in my mind taking the same rep. What would I have done there? Oh, that was really cool how he did that. So just learning, you know, in those moments.
Tyree Jackson, reps are critical to him, Steve. I wrote a very highly regarded piece for BuffaloBills.com. 8 players to watch in Bills OTAs. And the quarterback thing, you know which quarterback? I know what our poll said today. I said Tyree's the guy to watch in the next few weeks. Derek Anderson's gone. Tyree has a chance to, as he said, steal reps, a chance to really make his case for a spot on the 53, right? He'll be here, I would think, in training camp. He might get a chance to play in preseason. He probably should. But now's the time for Tyree Jackson to make his move to show them that, I think, first, that he has the necessary mechanics to be accurate and to be on time. And second, to show that he has kind of an early command of the offensive playbook. He's only been here a couple of weeks, so he won't have total command. But
right.
This is important couple of weeks here for Tyree Jackson. We talked with him about that today.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. He's in a unique situation where there's no pressure for him to play. The only pressure there is for him to get better and get as good as he can get. That's a great spot for a young player to be in, and that's right in his wheelhouse. That's where he's at.
Yeah. So we'll get a chance to watch OTAs, and we can fill in the blanks on this. Today's topic of tomorrow. What do you got there? Go ahead.
This is the great. We sometimes cross over into other sports. Dirk Nowitzki, the great Dallas Maverick, retired this year, and somebody's asked him how it's going, and he said, "You know what? I have not worked out once, and I have had ice cream almost every day." And I read that to you today in the office. I said, "You know what? That's what I did when I quit playing. I wouldn't drive past a burger joint. I'd go in. I'd get a Whopper with cheese, and I would stop whenever I wanted and eat and drink whatever I wanted after I retired. Of course, I paid the price. I'm still paying the price for living that life. But man, oh man, when I retired, I was done." I was done. And Dirk Nowitzki, obviously
sounds
in the
like
same
he's
boat.
There too.
He's done.
We've got a good show coming up tomorrow at noon. Make sure you join us. Our production assistants today from George Blatt, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Karchus, James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. See you tomorrow at noon. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.